Don't often.
You made me stop. Hi, everybody. This is Dean Hanglin from the Annex Gallery of the Eastern Columbia Building here in the heart of the historic core of Los Angeles. This is your Chilpak Hollywood Hour, and as always, I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Phil Larness.
Thank you, Dean Hanglin. And that gigantic sound you're hearing is the exhale of relief that
of
this, our 20th attempt to begin the show, has not proved futile.
Why do you have to tell him that? You don't have
It's a special experience. You mean like you don't have to tell the endings of movies and TV shows before people have had a chance to see them?
What the hell is going on? You're just tearing to me.
Which brings it, well, as your heterosexual life partner, that is my responsibility and my joy.
Awkward.
Hey, we have special guests today.
I know. Can you believe we're having this conversation in front
of
other
people? Always say we're never going to fight in front of the guests.
And yet we do.
We also fight in front of the kids.
Yeah.
But that toughens them up.
Our guests today are my good friends Steve Kazir and Catherine Annette. Hi, guys. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
Hello. Thanks for having me back.
Yes.
Steve is a second time guest.
Returning guest.
Did you bring him a gift?
I didn't. He can take one piece of artwork.
I'm leaving.
Off the
see you later.
You can go through my sketch pad and have any picture.
Second time guests are supposed to get a gift.
Oh, that's right.
Pick one free painting off the walls? No, I think.
Yeah, that might be problematic, but I'll paint you a little something afterwards.
Well, Steve, as you pointed out, since this is Monday the 10th of June, all the artwork's been sold.
Oh, that's right. Because we had a fabulous art walk just on June.
Yeah, Dean, it was incredible how many people were coming in here just loaded
with
13th.
Cash. I mean, 13th of June.
13th of June. Yeah, Friday.
13th of June.
The 9th was the art walk. Yes, so today's the 13th.
Completely sold out.
Exactly. No artwork left. Remember that. Hi, guys. How are you?
Really good.
Excellent.
Happy to be here.
This
awesome.
This is a big week, isn't
it? It's a big week for our show, why we're all here. We've all worked together. Did you know this, Phil?
It's a huge week for anyone turning on Showtime. Showtime?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yes.
Oh. You got to edit that out. No, it's Cinemax.
Why would you...
Because I got Showtime and Cinemax on a package.
Oh, well, as long as you have Cinemax.
Yeah. No, it's Cinemax.
Well, it's a huge week for anyone turning on Showtime because what they have the opportunity to do is realize Showtime sucks. And I could be flipping over to Cinemax right now to see TV's Dean Hanglin.
That's right. In TV's Steve Kazir's fantastic new series called Femme Fatales.
That's right, Femme Fatales. Yay. It's an anthology show, 13 half-hour episodes.
Yep.
Dean is in one, and Dean, this is what, the third show we've worked together on?
I know.
Which is amazing.
It is amazing, because Steve and I go way back past Team Knight Rider.
Yes, Tubot Team Knight Rider, which in a review of this show, they mentioned Team Knight Rider being also similar to Femme Fatales in that it was a show that was better than it needed to be. The ultimate compliment.
Oh my gosh. Was that a review?
My God.
Yeah, they mentioned VIP and Team Knight Rider. They must have looked at me up on IMDb and they're like, you know, Femme Fatales is a show that's better than it needs to be, along with VIP and Team Knight Rider. So that was a nice compliment.
That's a nice compliment.
10 years later.
That's very sweet of them. It's better than it needed to be. I would like that review. I would like to say I'm better than I need to be.
Yeah. But I think our first team up was on VIP.
It was VIP, though you had written something for it. Weren't you working on Nightman?
I was on Nightman.
And I was up in Vancouver when Nightman was going.
Yeah.
That was the actor who refused to work nights.
Yes.
Isn't that the deal?
Yes.
Yeah, the show is about a superhero who comes out at night, and the actor had it in his contract that he's not working nights.
Yeah.
So that he would... I don't know.
Had that not been the case, it would still be on right now in its 15th season. But unfortunately, he just had a problem with nights, and that was the end of that.
That's right. And, of course, one of the actresses in Femme Fatale is Catherine.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good again. Still good.
Good, excellent. Now, did you enjoy... let's talk about you for a second. Did you enjoy working with me?
I did. It was a complete pleasure. I actually, it was the first time I met you. I didn't know you before the show, and I'm very glad we met. I think we became great friends.
Absolutely.
But I just remember I didn't know who you were at all. And I just remember getting, I'm sorry, don't kick me out. I got in the transpo van, and you're just pulling up, and you open the door, and the transpo guy goes, "Holy shit, it's Dean Hanglin." I was like, "Who? What?"
He knows me from my crime robbing days. I think that
exactly. Robbing vans, payroll vans.
Exactly. Holy shit, he's going to hide the cash. He's here.
That's the episode Girls Gone Dead also co-stars another VIP acting alum, Charlie O'Connell.
Oh, that's right. So, we had talked about that.
I've used all my favors up. I don't know any other actors I could put in the show.
Well, Steve, we've had you on the show before, of course, and when you were back, you were working on Castle.
Correct.
And Dean has talked about Femme Fatales, and he's talked about going to WonderCon to promote it and everything. Mm-hmm. But why don't you, since occasionally Dean gets little things wrong, like, say, the network.
And the dates.
Maybe you could tell us, if we're, for those not familiar, what Femme Fatales is.
So Femme Fatales is a half-hour anthology on Cinemax.
Got it. Cinemax, yeah, not Cinemax. My other one.
And each episode features a dangerous woman in, or women sometimes.
Right.
In dangerous situations. Sexy women usually. I mean, you can't see Catherine sitting next to me.
I just got called sexy and dangerous in the same sentence. I like it. Yeah. Thank
and
you.
And it's still early in the show.
We like to compare this to Twilight Zone meets Pulp Fiction, where there's like the contemporary crime noir thrillers. And most of the times, the guys don't make it out. Dean, you're one of them. I'm not ruining spoilers, but most of the guys on the show, don't make it out. And I think all your artwork's going to be worth more after this episode airs, because people think you're dead.
But they realize I'm going to be killed off.
Is there any through line from episode to episode?
There, sometimes there is. I mean, they're each their standalone episodes, but for those who watch week to week, it takes place in the fictional community of Cuesta Verde, named after the Poltergeist town. So you will see some characters appear in later episodes.
I won't be one of them because I was killed.
Oh, unless
some
we do a,
dangerous
unless we do a
and
prequel.
Sexy characters. Just saying. No
Catherine
spoilers.
Comes back in
you
the
do?
Season finale.
I do.
I didn't know that.
Visions.
Huh? Look at you.
Yes.
Killing once or twice is not enough for me.
So wait, you come back as the same character?
Yes, as Tiffany.
Look at that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I had no idea.
There's actually a J. Roma Crazy Chicks commercial that takes place in this season.
Look at that.
And is there any...
So it's half hour anthology. We have a hostess.
There
like,
is a hostess.
Like Rod Serling, but it's the sexy Rod Serling actress.
So Rod Serling.
Tanit Phoenix is our Rod Serling. She plays Lilith.
Wait, you didn't think the male...
intros and outros the episodes, and sometimes makes cameos in the episode as other characters. So it's kind of like, where's Waldo? Where's Lilith? Keep an eye out for her.
Really? You mean I'd see her in the background?
Already? Several episodes have aired that, yeah, she will play like just a regular, like in Bad Medicine, she plays a nurse in the episode.
It's a little bit like how Mr. Rourke would always intro the storyline when they got off the plane, but then occasionally Mr. Rourke would suddenly be the bartender in a certain thing, you know, in disguise, making
exactly.
It happen.
Exactly, it's like Mr. Rourke. Because Serling never appeared in the Twilight Zone, but yeah, I do remember that Mr. Rourke episode with, like, he was, like, evil in that one, which I watched when I was, like, younger, and I was like, what, he was, like, the devil or something like that.
Sure.
So that one he cameoed in, that one stuck with me. But yes, Lilith appears in, sometimes she'll just intro the episode, other times you'll see her intro and make a cameo.
So why an anthology show?
Because we're insane.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, we have
fun.
Yeah, we have
well,
you know,
it's
look,
fun
we,
for the actors.
It's original stories every week, different characters. There's no small roles on the show, so everyone gets to do like great stuff. And it's just every week you don't know who's going to live or die or what's going to happen. You know, you don't it's a
But I mean, are we talking about literally like building from scratch new sets each
Absolutely.
Week?
We will. It's crazy. There's no standing sets. We'll either. Some of the episodes are already written, so we have to go out and find what we're looking for. Like
right.
Dean and Catherine's episode takes
Speaking
place at a sorority
set.
House.
Yeah.
So we had to find a place.
A scary frat house.
Into. Other times we will. And we filmed at the Herald Examiner right down the street.
Right down the
Three
street
different
from
episodes
here.
Episodes we shot there. It's quite a challenge.
But also to write, I mean, you have to introduce these characters. You have to sort of flesh them out instantly.
Literally flesh them out.
Literally flesh them out in 30 minutes.
Yes, it's quite a challenge. But it's the most creative freedom I've ever had.
Really?
A lot of us writers. Yeah, it's like we're sort of, you know, you get to create your own characters rather than, I mean, Lilith is obviously the recurring character, but everyone else is new. We have like, you know, anywhere from four to six different speaking parts.
And for those
and
who don't
know. A lot of
times
we'll find a location and be like, this is awesome, and then reverse engineer it and create a story that will take place in the location.
Ah, awesome.
So is there any, I mean, you've written on so many shows, and you've been a writer for a long time. Is there any sense of fun that ideas that you always wanted to put in but that may never have fit, you know, one of the series that you were working on before because of kind of how the construct was set for all those shows, that now you get to kind of pull ideas that you've always had on the bulletin board waiting for the opportunity to use?
Certain stuff. There's one coming up called Speed Date. Actually, it's already aired.
Speed Date has already aired because it's already on my TiVo.
Speed Date's already aired. Speed Date is based on an idea that I had with Mark Altman, and we turned it into an episode.
Cool.
Little things, little characters, stuff like that might be people we've sort of used before. I've recycled jokes that got a laugh 10 years later, so I knew.
Oh, yeah? Still killing?
Yeah, there's something in Speed Date where, like, this guy says, I'm the international assassin known as the Owl, and someone says, who? And he says, exactly. See, it even lasts out. That was used in 1998 on VIP, and still funny.
You know what? I think I remember it on VIP, too.
It was in my first episode of VIP, so I don't know. Like, I guess
13
years later, it still holds up, so that's good.
That joke is better than it needs to be.
It's sort of like the tagline for the show, better than it needs to be. So, you know, I throw it out there, and, you know, I still own it. It hasn't been purchased by anyone, so I'll use it again another 10 years.
You should trademark it
by now. Get a T-shirt.
So, were you a fan of anthology shows?
Absolutely. Twilight Zone is definitely my top one or two shows of all time.
Did you see them all?
Probably at one time or another, I've seen them all. I own the box set, which Catherine has.
Oh, is that right?
Can you give that back to me? Never seen a lot
Maybe.
Of the actors have never
Maybe
seen
I might
the Twilight
keep it
Zone.
Hostage.
So you hadn't never seen Twilight Zone before you did this?
I'd seen it a couple times, and I was definitely on the ride at Disneyland.
There's a ride at Disneyland for
Twilight Zone? The Hotel of Terror, right? You go in. And
oh, right. That's a Twilight Zone?
It's a Twilight Zone. Yeah. The intro is all Twilight Zone. You're now
I thought that was just a... Well, I haven't been in... I haven't been to Disneyland since 86. So that ride where the elevator, where it looks like the ceiling's rising?
It might not be the Twilight Zone, but it rips off on the Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
You go, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Does it really?
Going through the time, yeah. And it's like, yeah. It's
I don't remember that.
Well, you'll have to go back now.
I was there when it was pre-Synergy Disneyland, before they tried to combine
trip.
Products.
No, I actually, I'd seen a couple when I was younger, but when we started doing the show, I really wanted, you know, everybody was talking about Twilight Zone and all the references to Twilight Zone. And so Steve so kindly lent to me his huge pack of Twilight Zone. And I just sat for like 3 days straight just watching them all. And I have to say that my favorite is still the man on the plane with...
That's not just any man. That's William
Shatner.
That's
Bill Shatner.
Shatner.
Mr. Shatner on the plane. That's right. That's a terror at 20,000 feet.
That is so good.
Referenced in Bridesmaids, even. One of the big gags in Bridesmaids. When
Shatner's on the plane?
Is on a plane and sees something on the wing of the plane.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that hilarious? So it's a gag, see? Use some jokes you can just run forever.
It wasn't even funny the first time when you saw it in the Shatner episode. Now it's hilarious.
Now, does it hold up? I would wonder if seeing Twilight Zone now still has the same value, like, not the cultural value.
I think it's fun. I think it's a little bit heavy on the UFO stuff, so as long as you, like, you know, a lot of the tricks are like, what's happening? Oh, it's an alien. It's like, it's kind of a cop-out. But then somebody explained to me that back in the day that was huge.
That was
like, nobody wrote about aliens and UFOs before.
Right.
So I'm really dating myself.
That's the same critique about X-Files, actually.
But it's not that I don't like it. It's just that you could kind of... you could see it coming after a while. So maybe... It just, you can't watch, 20 in a row. Maybe that's the only...
Well, yeah, I would also
think too much of anything is not necessarily a good thing, especially all in a row.
But also, because it's so influential, I would think that you've seen references in modern-day stuff, then you go, oh, that's where it came from.
Oh, you do. Yeah, Twilight Zone is the base of so much.
I know.
It's incredible. I'm not putting it down. I love it. It's awesome.
And at the same time, I mean, here we are 50 years later, going on 50 years later, and we are still talking about... You know, what episodes hold up or whatever. It's not... What's the Twilight Zone?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know, and how many shows that were huge hits
nobody would
remember.
And what Serling was doing... I mean, he reused some actors, too. You've seen in several... Like, Shatner was in another one where he's in a diner with his wife and he's stuck with using this fortune-telling machine. He couldn't get out. But what Serling did was... What we sort of do as well is, like, it's minimal sets and sort of, like, written, like, one-act plays type of thing, trying to keep... you know, the balance of production with the limited stuff that you have resources to use.
And he does the same thing, too, where he was given a set and then he wrote an episode?
I would think so. And it made, I heard that he dictated all his scripts to his secretary.
Oh, you're kidding.
Type, which is unbelievable to be that prolific and be
How would you not?
I can barely even type, so I can't barely speak. So
well, Gene Roddenberry was the same way. He didn't type. He couldn't type.
They're still optioning Gene Roddenberry post-it notes for different movies and TV shows.
Right? Is that right?
I don't know. It seems like everything's Gene Roddenberry's this, or Gene Roddenberry's scrap of toilet paper.
So will femme fatales be something that will hold up, that will stand the test of time, Steve?
Yes.
I mean, and is
Steve,
this something?
Talking to Steve.
Well, no, and is this something that you even think about when you're doing an anthology? Do you think?
I think it'll definitely have a cult following. And as more, you know, Cinemax is sort of it's been around for a long time, but the image is not as well known. And I think this is the first step in sort of
rebranding,
turning around the aircraft carrier, as Mark Altman says, or I say cleaning up the toxic lake.
Oh,
but I think, you know, I think as people get aware of it, it'll become more popular. People will like certain episodes and characters, and we hope to do a lot of these. We've done the first 13; they're all different, and we're proud of them all. They're fun, but I think. I would like to think that sometime in the future that they'll have a fan base. I don't think anyone's doing an anthology now for obvious reasons. It's super challenging.
Super challenging. And you got 3 days to shoot an episode.
Three days. So everyone you see, even the premiere, which was 43 minutes or something, was shot in 3 days. And we're not sacrificing with the look or anything or in the acting.
I know. The production values are through the roof.
Roger Shingarian, our DP, starts with beautiful women and then makes them the show.
Actors are incredible.
Yeah.
That service is pretty good, too.
I actually can't really think of how you could possibly do that. Who's coordinating all that production?
It's a combination of, you know, it's everyone from, you know, Mark and myself and Dave Williams, our other exec producer, and Mark Gottwald to start.
And how involved is Cinemax? I didn't see any execs on the side.
They're in New York, so they're not around.
Right, that's handy.
They bought the show. Based on the men's magazine featuring the women, and
which you still own, right?
I don't. That's Mark. That's Mark's. Dave Williams.
Oh, that's Dave Williams owns the magazine.
Dave Williams owns the magazine,
and then that brand is then put on top of this.
Yeah, and I think the magazine is supposed to be coming out later this year.
Oh, I thought it was already out.
No, they're relaunching it.
Oh,
it'll feature a lot of the girls in the show. Obviously.
Oh, did you, Catherine? Did you get it in the magazine?
I hope so.
You don't know.
I hope we get a photo shoot too. I want to go together.
Homme fatale.
The spinoff magazine.
That's right. Hilarious.
But you know, it's Bob Conti and Marlene Wade at HBO Cinemax in New York are our executives, and you know, approve the stories and casting. And
are they sending notes and stuff like that?
They have terrific notes. Yeah.
They're fantastic, and they're really excited about the show.
But they're not being, you know, so many executive battles. I'm thinking about Fox, frankly, but that relationship became really toxic.
I think they're trying to get away from the skinamaxy elements. There is a sexy element to the show, but it's we hope that it's integrated as much as we can into the story.
Right.
And that's a new territory for me to be able to show stuff like that or language. It's like. But it's more like that's what it is in real life. So
right, you get that kind of freedom.
You can't swear. You can't. Yeah, the freedom in that sense.
Yeah, it's true.
And there is an order. Is it too early to know yet about a second season or?
I guess we've aired 5 up until now, with 6 being Girls Gone Dead. So I think they're kind of tabulating everything. It's not like in the networks where the next morning they know what the rating is.
Right.
They air these several times during the week. Get a composite number, see about subscribers. So I think until they air the whole season, they won't really have a sense, you know?
Right.
So when you first pitch something like an anthology, do you have a pilot script or do you have several scripts?
There were a couple that were already written just as examples containing Lilith, and The White Flower, which is already aired, was one that was done, and something like Murder, I believe, was another one that's already aired that was done, just as examples. So they were written on spec.
Right.
And then we had some other, like, storylines. You know, idea, like, Bad Medicine was one. Behind Locked Doors, which was the premiere, was soon afterwards. Just other, like, arenas that got approved. But it was sold basically on the magazine, and it did have 2 scripts that were completed.
Wow. Right.
So that was nice to have.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think, you know, just Mark and I had a lot of produced credits on TV, so we were sort of known
right.
to start with. But just to have, like, here's some examples of what the show could be. I mean, those obviously changed. I think, I mean, maybe one of those didn't even have, we didn't even have Lilith, the narrator at the time, but she was added later.
She was added as a through yeah. line to keep you all connected.
Yeah, which is an interesting way to bookend and the show.
So they weren't nervous about you not delivering? Because, I mean, three-day shoots for an episode seems so, it seems like you'd need somebody really experienced to deliver that.
Yeah, I don't even know if they know we're using 3 days. They're so happy with the
clearly,
they're so happy with the results that they're very pleased. And so, you know, post obviously takes a lot longer.
Yeah.
We write them in 1 day. No, I'm kidding. Shoot it in three. No, I mean, we take pride in the writing, and then we know when they're done, we get going. And a lot of it changes based on the location and stuff like that.
What is your working style, you and Mark? Because it seems like you both write together.
We teamed up a couple of years ago. But when we're doing stuff that we are writing together, our old method was day writer and night writer. I think we talked about this before. I would work during the day, and Mark's a night owl, so I could send him off a script at like 10:30 at night, where he could go for several hours. I wake up early, so I'm up at like 6:30 in the morning.
Right.
He's already sent it back to me. He's, you know, continued it, you know, rewritten what I've done.
Right.
And then we'll go back and forth until we're done. That's what we'll do.
And then when does he sleep?
He must go to sleep at like 2 in the morning or something like that.
Oh, I see.
You know.
Oh, and then
2-3 in the morning.
And but then he's up at 10.
So he's a little,
and what does he wear?
I'm fascinated.
You'll have to bring him for that. So but I mean, in this, since the episodes are shorter, we'll each send each other our scripts, but there's different collaborations for everyone to do their own writing for
right.
the show.
That's cool. So that's your typical work day then. You're up at 6, you're writing, and then you go to bed at 10. And
I'll get up. I can start early. Like today, I was up at 6:30.
Good God. It's a holiday. Whoops.
Yeah,
I blew that.
I wake up early. I wake up early all the time, so it doesn't matter what
time
I go to sleep.
Every Monday is a holiday.
Yeah.
Life is a holiday.
Ah, look at you. Catherine, when do you get up?
When do you get up?
Yeah,
who cares when I get up or what I'm writing?
We have many actors who listen to our show. They want to know about the life of an actor.
What's your daily routine?
Yeah.
Noon? No, just kidding. I get up early just because I'm a morning owl. That doesn't even make sense.
Owl.
Yeah.
I like that. Who? Who?
Who?
Exactly.
Who? Exactly.
Yeah.
I get up early just to get stuff done, because even if you're not on set working, as many actors know, you're hustling to get work.
Right.
So if you don't get up, you know, at the crack of dawn and get everything done and start sending out submissions and talking to your agent and manager by 9 o'clock, you just wasted half the day.
Really? Because my agent and manager don't even show up till 10. Like, I might as well sleep till 11.
I have been suggesting a change in your representation.
You might need to get new ones.
I guess I'm your best agent over the years.
You know what? It's so true. You've got me more work than any single representation person I've ever had. It's awesome. Well, kids out there.
No commission. It's great.
No
deal
commission. Hey, I get you on the show.
I like it.
Give him a painting.
And then you audition daily. You run around. You work out. Then what's your evening? Do you
party?
Party, meditate. What? Do you go to yoga class?
It all depends. Every night is different, obviously. I just try to hang out with good people and leave as much as possible. And
sword fight.
I am a sword fighter.
Oh.
I do stage combat and sword fighting.
What?
So, yeah.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
Swan,
I think you mentioned it, but I completely forgot. I can't imagine it. Like you wielding a broadsword.
Oh, just you wait. Don't piss me off. I'll show you.
You won't have to imagine it. It's coming.
That's right.
Yeah, no, I'm a trained sword fighter. And we do some movies, and then we also do the doubling in some movies as well. So
really?
I practice a lot. I practice a
couple.
And
do you do the live thing at like Ren Fairs and stuff?
Yes, we don't do Ren Fair, but we do. We are up for hire. Like you can hire Star Wars or... I just was Elizabeth Swann the other day for a Pirates of the Caribbean presentation. So we go up there and
Really?
That's how I make my money when
that's
I don't
so
act.
That's so awesome. That's so cool. So you've trained then as a stage combat person. And then you get, you're a group of you that get hired?
Yeah. And we get hired and we go and we, you know, sometimes it's conferences, sometimes it's kids' parties, you know. Sometimes it's like, you know, we go down to Comic-Con.
Oh, yeah?
So I have a lightsaber in my car. A lot of people make fun of me for that. It's in my back seat.
Holy crap. That's major nerdy.
Yes, it is.
Unbelievable. What kids' parties get stage combat fighting?
Oh, you wouldn't even believe. We actually, it's usually entertainment couples. They like to have it. And I was just, I was Batwoman, or Batgirl, I'm sorry, Batgirl the other day at the president of HBO's six-year-old kid's party. And not only that, he hired Batman and Batgirl and I believe Robin, but he had hired the original Batmobile from the 60s movie for us to come in on.
It's good to be rich. Obviously.
Yeah, I know.
And blaring the Batman song.
And it was
and
Chris O'Donnell as Robin. I mean, that's
Chris O'Donnell
the sad
actually was there
thing.
As Robin. Yeah, he had nothing else to do. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That's amazing.
It's fun.
And
it's
then,
really
so how long do you have to be there? Like,
they usually last an hour to an hour and a half, and depending on what the kid or the program wants.
And you go, hey, kids, it's me, Batgirl, and watch out behind you, there's the Joker, and you beat the crap
out
of him.
Well, we go in, and we kind of start training them, like, if I'm
Wait, you train the kids to
hold
weapons?
Yeah, we go in, and we're like, oh, like styrofoam weapons or, like, plastic lightsabers. We go in, and we're like, we're training you to be Jedi. And then I'm Princess Leia training them, and then Darth Vader arrives. Dun, 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 dun. And then we go through a series of challenges to see, you know, who wins the treasure, because there's a treasure hunt at the end. If it's a kid's party, obviously, not for adult games. Unless they're very drunk, yeah, then we'll do that.
I want a treasure.
Well, we'll see what that treasure is. No, but... and so then Darth Vader comes in. We do a lightsaber fight that lasts about 10 minutes. And then obviously he always wins, or he always loses.
Oh, right.
The good person always wins.
That's
good always wins.
Fight.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Right. Well, it is. We're professionals.
Stare at clock for 10 minutes.
Yeah, fight.
Long.
Yeah.
It goes by like that.
Has any of these ever gone wrong?
Oh, my God.
I want to hear those stories. What's the worst thing that's happened at a kid's party?
Okay, other than crazy parents, which is obviously the worst, and then kids will sometimes just beat the shit out of, like, Darth Vader when he comes, like, Darth Vader, bam, 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 bam.
Are there some creepy dads who are like, hey,
Batgirl?
Oh,
yeah. Hey, Batgirl, here's your tip, baby.
Oh, my God.
I would say the worst for me is I was Elizabeth Swann. It was a with Jack Sparrow and Elizabeth Swann party, and we were doing the sword fight, and I ripped his beard completely off. I got caught, and his whole beard and his whole wig go flying across the room, and he's just like, and the kids are just like,
Oh my God, you're not Jack.
Yeah, what's going on? He's like, I'm having a bad hair day. So he went in the back, and I had to entertain the kids for like 5 minutes when they're like, what's going on? What's going on? And that's like improv lessons that you can't even pay for.
I bet. Oh my gosh. And the kids must be so demanding too, because they want entertainment all the time.
They always, and they're most demanding when they want to prove that they're smart, and they're like, you're not real. And then you're like, well, here I am, I'm real. You know, you grab their hand, they're like, see, this is real. And the cutest thing ever is I was a pirate, and the kid's like, you're not a real pirate. And I was like, well, you're not a real kid. She's like, well, I know you're not a real pirate because your teeth are too white. You don't have disgusting teeth. All pirates have disgusting teeth.
Wow.
I was like, that's the best compliment ever.
No, thank you. Thank
insult
you,
compliment.
Give me
yeah.
insult compliment.
There are some Somali pirates who would really disagree with that.
Yes, they have done very well with
they have teeth. Very good dental care.
Yes.
I mean, we do have to use our pirate booty for something. Why not dental care?
Do you have a website where we can see? Do you put these up on YouTube or anything?
Yeah, I think the website is Best Action Events.
Best Action Events.
Yeah, it's on Facebook, too.
Ah, awesome. I want to see these.
Best Action Events.
That is hilarious.
So you're gonna concoct children's parties now.
Horrible children's parties where they take out all their violence on major film characters.
Who knows, maybe one day they'll be asking for a femme fatale parties if it's a big enough hit.
Right,
can come
a femme fatale.
Yeah, we need the Pirates of the Caribbean ripoff episode. The Clipper ship. I'm sure we have the budget. We could do, that one's easy
we could do,
days.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Cuesta Verde. Is it on the ocean? Is it on the coast?
Cuesta Verde is on
there's
the coast.
They got an ocean.
Yeah. Cuesta Verde, circa 1734. That would be great. We do have one that
Cuesta Verde has a Spanish name.
It hasn't aired yet. It's called Haunted, which originally starts in the 1920s.
Oh,
cool.
And then it takes place in the contemporary world, but it deals with a supernatural element that started in the 20s. So,
you know, you can always, because it's such a fun show, it doesn't even have to be set back in the day. We could just be like delusional. You know, like people that think they're pirates.
Exactly.
Because everybody's crazy on that show. It's like, we're modern-day pirates.
Modern-day pirates.
Old school clothes.
Could happen.
Yeah. Like the Brady Bunch with Jesse James.
We did look into the Queen Mary as a location, but unfortunately, it got a lot more expensive than the last time I filmed it.
Oh, is that right?
It would have been great.
I got bit by a black widow on the Queen Mary.
What?
True story. So
no
I'm
way.
Because I
wonder you're so deadly.
There's a black widow in our
blood is the black widow. Yeah.
In our episode, there's a black widow. Besides me.
Right.
That's right.
Like a real
we
black
do
widow.
Have a black widow that
an actual spider.
Appears and Girls Gone Dead.
And where was that?
Crawling all over the house.
Wrangled?
Found at the house. It's the only... Oh, actually, we use a horse in a later episode, but it's the first insect we use on an episode. We wrangled it. I think they looked for a spider, and we were like, hey, let's use a spider. And they're like, hey, how's this one? And we're like, that's a black widow. But it's great. It spun a web and like it descends off of a fireplace. It's great.
I saw that in the,
got the ending
in
shot,
the teaser,
yeah.
too, right? They showed that.
But what the spider really wants to do is direct. That's the
spider's angling to direct, absolutely.
The oldest joke.
That's the oldest
That's
joke.
That's the second oldest joke after Owl Who.
Exactly.
So you are still in production right now on
still,
this?
Still, they're all done being filmed. We're still doing post-production.
Right.
And is it distracting in any way? Do you block it out, or do you listen to it? The feedback that comes in once the show airs...
Only a couple have aired right now, and I haven't really done intensive searches on the internet, but I think it'll start to come. There's a little things here and there.
Yeah.
And,
but would you want to be aware of it, or would you just want
to... I'd be curious just to see.
Because, you know, as an actor, I was trained never to read your reviews until the run of the play was over. Because even if they're great reviews, you're going to be totally self-conscious going, oh, I do this monologue really great, apparently, and then you'll screw it up. And if it's bad reviews, then you'll just defeat yourself. Every
in this
time
case,
you step on
stage. I feel proud of the show. So it's like if someone bashes it, they're sort of like living in their parents' basement and nothing to do. But I've taken several hits over the internet. I remember. I think my first thing was like I worked on Sliders, and then I guess my episode was pointed out as the one where it jumped the shark.
Oh!
Back when they used to use that term, I don't even know if they use that anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
The episode where you died in the X-Files may have been called Jump the Shark.
May have actually
that,
been called
yeah,
Jump the Shark.
Yeah, if it didn't jump before then, that's definitely
that's
possible.
Right. That's right. I didn't know you did a Sliders.
I did. That was my first writing credit, actually.
Really?
Yeah, my first thing.
You
I
did
sold.
A slide.
I did a slide.
We talked about that when we met here. This is when the show moved back to L.A. and shot the Universal.
Right.
We worked when we were shooting in Vancouver.
Exactly.
Did you die?
I did not die. I just had one scene where I turned Jerry in. He's trying to hide incognito in the world because he has a lookalike. And I'm like, it's him, get him. And then all the cops come. Hilarious.
Yeah. You still get paid like $1 a year.
No, I haven't seen a cent from that show because I was Canadian and you had a buyout up there. So you got your...
Speaking of past tense.
Yes, I'm no longer Canadian.
Yay.
That's right. We had
that talk conversation too.
We had a celebration here for Dean's birthday and his...
my American citizenship. Which I actually traveled to London on my U.S. passport.
We still like you as an American, but you had a certain charm as a Canadian.
Now gone.
You have dual
I'm
citizen?
Charmless.
Is it dual citizenship?
I am dual.
You can't renounce
your
citizen. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. When you travel, it's like you're going to travel with the passport to the country you're coming back into. So if you're living in L.A., it'd be silly to use your Canadian passport because then they go, well, how long you lived here? So it's like going through immigration again. So...
I have a question, though.
Yeah?
When you go out of country, do you claim you're a Canadian still, though, just so you don't get the...
No, I actually screwed that up because I was so used to writing Canadian that I wrote Canadian going out, and they didn't even notice.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I also bought that $100 biometric thing going through customs now where they take a picture. Oh, it's awesome. For 5 years, for $100, get this. You can skip customs lines when you come back into the country. All you do is they take your fingerprints on an automatic machine, and then you answer like 5 questions, and then a slip of paper comes out like an ATM, and then you just bypass all the lines, and you just get the hell out of there.
Wait, for customs?
For customs, for U.S. customs.
Meanwhile, when they take those fingerprints, they're actually taking samples of your hands.
Yeah, exactly.
And cloning you, right?
No, you go through a very extensive interview process.
That's interesting. You know, we made this documentary about conspiracy, and we're coming back from England for the world premiere of it, and I'm waiting in the line for customs to come back in, and I don't even have anything to declare except that I hate waiting in line. And they say, you know, the whole thing, like, what were you doing? And I said, I was in London for world premiere of my film. Well, yeah, what film? And I said, I made a movie about, you know, conspiracy. I kind of wanted to downplay that aspect. And they said, conspiracy? Okay, come. And I go around everything, and, like, all the guys take a break. and they all want to share with me what's really going on in the world.
Are you shitting me?
Absolutely serious.
I did not hear this
story. Like the, so the customs guys all, like, hush, hush, are whispering to me, okay, you need to know that this is what's going on. You know, and I was like, promise me you'll make a follow-up movie where you investigate this, and this, and this, and this.
Yeah. Are you kidding? And they work for the man.
And they work for the man.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's pretty cool. I hope one day where I go through customs and I'm working on femme fatales and they just get on their knees and bow. Please continue
Hey, come
on.
Come back here.
You have the greatest job ever.
Yeah, you got to come to the back room.
And Steve, how did this come about in the first place? I mean, I know that you and Mark had things in development. I want to ask you about, hopefully I'll get the title right, but I asked you about this the last time. They saved Hitler's brain.
Oh, I don't even, that was some... Crown International film,
right?
Like we had access to their catalog of
to
movies,
their catalog.
Somehow that one like got hooked up with some guys who had written music for it. Nothing ever happened with it. I don't think it's on IMDb anymore.
But so what was the impetus
for Femme Fatales?
For Femme Fatales, yeah.
Well, it was Mark had his company at one time owned the magazine.
Right.
Dave Williams owns it now, and I think Cinemax was looking for new programming for late night, and. I didn't even go to the meeting in New York. Mark and I, we take a lot of different meetings for different stuff.
Right.
He has family in New York, and he's like, I'll just go. I have a few things to do in New York, and I'll drop in there and see. And he, basically, I think he had those scripts we talked about and just the concept, and talked to them and sold it in the room.
But
sold
you had
it
ever
in
said,
the room.
You guys,
but I think the name Femme Fatales is a good.
It's a good
brand.
But had you had the talk with them, because you guys have known each other for a long time? Had you ever said I would really someday I'd love to do a anthology show. This would be.
I think he had actually mentioned, do you want to write one of the scripts that, on spec? I was like, no. I don't know. So he already had, I think he had three, but one I guess didn't get produced finally, was just as examples. But he had stuff already, and I thought, well, it could be cool to do, but we're always trying to get a lot of different stuff going. This was just, Mark was just the point person on this one.
Wow.
And it just, it.
All right, and this is obviously a question that I should ask him, although so far we've been unsuccessful in getting him to come in. So you can tell me, just between us, is there ever going to be a Free Enterprise 2?
Apparently, I think it's close. I mean,
really? Right on.
Yeah,
Free Enterprise?
There's a script.
Oh, I know all about
more
it.
About it than I do.
Yeah, no, I'm good friends with. I'm good friends with Mark and also
Robert
Burnett.
Robert Burnett. Sure.
Trying to get that off the ground, and it was this close, and then Hollywood stuff happened.
Right.
But I hope so.
Are they back together? Are they re-pushing it forward, or are they so?
Oh, they're definitely pushing it forward.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good.
A couple people that like Isaiah Mustafa, who they had lined up for Free Enterprise 2, a part in Speed Date, episode number 4.
He is?
Character Raven. Yeah. Didn't you see that one? It already aired.
It's on my TiVo. I said that.
It aired already. People listening, they saw it already.
Oh, yes. So, yes, I did see it. It was awesome.
It was awesome.
Yeah, he's
and it was not on Showtime.
Enterprise 2.
No.
It was on Cinemax.
Cinemax. Fridays at 10.
Showtime is so over.
There's nothing good on Showtime.
I can't. You know what? It's all on TiVo. I just sort of write the titles of stuff I got to see, and then it goes in, and then
that's a good. I mean, that is really a good point. You don't actually have to find it.
It's all on demand as well, too.
It's all what?
It's all on demand as well.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't even know anymore.
So the way we consume entertainment.
Apparently,
is
my parents subscribe to Cinemax for now until if the show doesn't get picked up again, then they'll unsubscribe.
Yes, that's
but
what I'm
they said
do too.
That they I guess we are on. There's some featurette about WonderCon. On Cinemax right now and on demand. They're like, we saw you with a bunch of the girls. I think we're all there.
Cool.
We have to watch it.
We could go upstairs and watch it.
Well, so Catherine, was that your first experience at WonderCon?
Yes.
What was that like?
Oh my goodness.
I loved it. You loved it?
It was a little bit crazy.
Overwhelming at all?
It was very overwhelming. The costumes are interesting. I remember getting interviewed and they're like, what's your favorite costume? And I was like, the people in drag, because there were just so many guys around in skirts, and I just thought it was great. I was like, that's so cool that everybody's allowed to dress up in whatever they want and just walk around, and everybody's.
But don't you think it's a little odd that it's Sailor Moon that most of the guys are dressing up as? It's always a fat guy with a beard dressed as Sailor Moon. For some reason, that has become the crossover, the accepted crossover for any guy who maybe just bit curious about dressing up as a girl.
I think that's a good research topic for somebody.
Who is Sailor Moon?
Sailor Moon?
That little blue outfit sailor girl.
It's better that you don't know.
Yeah, there's certain things I should never know.
Maybe people will be dressing up as femme fatales. I don't know. And then we're going to have a femme fatales will be at Comic-Con in San Diego in July, that weekend, July 23rd, 24th.
Yeah, yeah.
There will be a booth. We'll all be there.
I will be there.
If you're listening to this, make sure to drop by and say you heard it on the podcast. And we'll have a special gift for you. I don't know what that is.
We'll give you a bookmark for the
Dean will be supplying this.
We'll be having a panel again. We'll be showing clips, and there'll be some special announcements.
Steve, was this your first time participating at something like WonderCon?
Oh, no.
No, no.
I've been going to comic conventions. Grew up in Chicago. I've been going there since I was in,
'70s.
Junior high. I remember my friend...
But as a writer on a show, was this your first time?
No, I had gone. I mean, I've always gone to Comic Con and WonderCon throughout the years. I've been a fan of comic books. I never wrote one until recently. I have one coming out called Elvis Van Helsing.
Elvis
Van Helsing. Yeah, my original graphic novel. But I'd gone. I wrote some animated shows for MTV. I've been spoken on panels for animation. Every year at Comic-Con San Diego, we do a panel with genre writers.
Yeah.
So some of the stuff I've written on is genre.
You did the Spider-Man MTV,
didn't
you? It
was MTV Spider-Man.
Which was really well done.
It was pretty cool.
Really,
yeah. It was on a couple of years ago. They only did one season. I think they had spent so much money beforehand prepping the show that there wasn't much left by the time they actually got around to doing it.
Right.
And what do you enjoy, as a writer, what do you enjoy about participating in it, as opposed to attending it as a fan?
Well, I think a lot of us on those panels have been fans. I mean, I've been reading comics since I started. That's why I kind of like the anthology format's cool because it's kind of like the old EC titles, but this is like a sexier version of it.
Right.
But yeah, it's great. I mean, I collect comics. I collect original comic book art. So I'm as much a fan as anyone.
You're gonna.
But
go
I like
anyway.
It's like I think you really. I think when Femme Fatales comes to San Diego in July, the show will already have been on. It'll be interesting to see. We had a big turnout at WonderCon, and it hadn't even come on yet.
Right.
Now it's going to be, watch out, girls, you're going to have a lot of marriage proposals coming your way.
Look at you.
Finally.
All right.
And probably.
If any of you have marriage proposals, please come.
Yeah.
And probably even more proposals for kids' parties.
I appeared in Speed Day with my shirt off. No marriage proposals.
Except for a few Sailor Moons.
Klingons. But I'm just not,
You did not get a marriage proposal, but you did have to sign somebody's underwear. So I think it's one in the
we
same.
We don't like to talk about it.
What?
There's pictures.
You signed
look
somebody?
At my Facebook. There's
someone
pictures.
Yeah.
A guy?
At WonderCon,
were they in it at the time?
No.
Oh, okay.
Oh, in the underwear?
Yeah.
No. Who else signed it? No, it wasn't just me.
It was me and you.
I didn't sign it. I was there.
It was luckily you were gone.
Wow, that was
it
lucky.
Was, but Dean, it was your underwear.
Yeah, that's where my
don't pretend.
You.
Did you
a funny
it
story, I told it. We had a great panel at WonderCon, and Robert Lissardo was there.
Yep.
He's so awesome.
Who's great.
Isn't he awesome?
You might recognize
so nice.
Him from, you should
everything?
Get him for this. He would totally do it.
Why don't we get Robert?
Robert would definitely do it.
Yeah. I love when we have production meetings on the air.
He has,
I know you do.
More tattoos than anyone I've ever seen.
Yeah.
From like his neck down. But he's just, he's a great guy, terrific actor, very professional. I worked with him on VIP. I wrote a part for him on the show that I wasn't sure he was going to do because it involved a sexy show.
Oh yeah, no, he had
so
some action.
So he read it, he did it, and when we're actually filming that scene, he comes out. I told this at WonderCon, but he comes out and he goes, and he just looks at me. He's like, "I owe you, man." I guess he clearly did not have a problem with that scene.
Oh, really?
I haven't taken him up on the...
Well, because
he
always
me.
Plays badass guys. I imagine
he
would never...
He is a badass guy.
Never get a love scene.
Yeah, exactly. If he's doing a love scene, he's probably raping someone.
Right, exactly.
I would call it a love scene.
What?
I would call it a love scene. There's no love involved.
Well, okay.
Sex.
So it's a sex scene. But it was a lovely sex scene.
It was a lovely, lovely
it's
shot.
It's the love
lovely
of sex.
It was consensual, unlike some of maybe his other ones.
Yeah, exactly. Love.
Exactly.
But he was great. And he was, it was the second episode, and he was awesome. He was, to get a recognizable guy like that on the show early was just meant a lot for the show.
Yeah.
Give him some credibility. The episode before that, we had Angus Scrimm, who's the star of Fantastic.
Oh.
He was our oldest actor on the show.
Yeah.
At 84 years young. He is another great guy you can get to interview for the podcast. Would be terrific. He came out of retirement to do Femme Fatales.
You're kidding. I didn't realize he retired.
Yeah, he did. And the premiere we had Paul Mazursky, who was... So we had two guys in their 80s on the show.
And that's of course...
So awesome. And many women.
Bob Lissardo was on a Lone Gunman episode, right?
He was too.
Maximum Byers.
Max in the prison. Yeah, that's right. He was in
that. He's been in a ton. I think he was probably on the X-Files regular show too.
I think so.
He's been in everything.
Yeah.
He's most known for being the villain of a season of Nip Tuck. And it was his first Comic-Con or WonderCon experience, and he was loving it.
Yeah, I mean, everybody was coming up.
Everyone's coming up. The little tentative coming up to him. Because
they're afraid.
But he is the nicest. He is such a nice guy.
Okay, so I'm fascinated by this. You know, as Dean knows, I'm not, crowds a little bit. Well, even you have a bit of the trouble with crowds when you're
not on stage.
Right. Being in them. Yeah.
I hate being in crowds. I like being on stage and looking at a crowd.
So if this was your first experience, Catherine, with something like this, with all this attention being directed at you in person like that, and if it was a little bit overwhelming and fun, I mean, what's the key for keeping it fun and not giving into any feelings of being overwhelmed
or freaking out?
Is it just having the experience with angry kids at a party that helps you do that? Or
I would say a lot of alcohol and pills before.
Oh, you are not.
I'm just kidding.
Wow,
I'm so kidding.
It went dark.
No. I think that
don't use drugs, kids.
Our drugs are.
No, that was a complete joke. No, I think that it changes when the crowd is a very happy crowd and everybody's very excited. Especially at WonderCon, everybody. Well, we were behind a desk, so none of the mobs could actually get to us unless we crossed the line. But everybody was so happy and excited to meet you, so it didn't feel like a crowd. It just felt like a big party that everybody knew about. Or everybody knew each other. So I'm a little bit nervous about Comic-Con because I too also have a little fear of crowds.
It's like WonderCon times.
Yeah, that's what everybody's told me. But I think you're right. Once you deal with, 50 screaming kids where you have to control them and not have them jumping into the pools or hitting each other with lightsabers, I think being able to just be in a crowd and have no responsibility.
Actually, that described Comic-Con pretty well.
You know what?
Just trying to make sure nobody kills each other with a lightsaber.
But in this case, I didn't have to make sure nobody killed each other, so it was actually a relief. So it was fun. I don't know. I think it's a very fun atmosphere, and everybody's there for the same reason, and nobody's there to hurt each other. So
are you going to come in a Princess Leia outfit?
I might.
You could, couldn't you?
To throw everybody.
You could totally pack
Slave
that.
Leia, please.
There's like 80 Slave Leias there every year.
Some of them are. I think 90% should be.
There should be a quality control inspector.
Yeah, that was probably the costume I saw most at WonderCon.
What's that?
The Princess Slave Leia was the costume most seen at WonderCon.
Yeah. There's a lot of Wonder Woman. I think there's going to be new Wonder Woman, even though the show didn't get picked up. David E. Kelly's Wonder Woman. That possible, outfit. Yeah.
Star Wonder Woman.
Did get picked up, right?
Nope.
No, it didn't.
Oh.
David E. Kelly got turfed. They saw it.
Wow.
Apparently, it was so stupid because she was Wonder Woman running a major corporate empire, but she was also in disguise like Clark Kent in the same corporation. So she was like, what? Like, everybody knew. She was flying a jet, and she's Wonder Woman, and she's known around the universe. And yet, at the same time, she's putting on the glasses and donning her own secretary. Like, was the weirdest construct of any superhero. It's like, well, if it's Wonder Woman, why is she pretending to be a Clark Kent? Like, if everybody already knows, it's what? It didn't make sense. So
I think that's right where it fell apart. So yeah.
Sorry, David E. Kelly. Well, can't win them all.
Yeah, and I don't know who they cast to play Wonder Woman, but now that we've met Catherine, we know they got it wrong.
That's right.
There'll be a remake, and I'll be Wonder Woman.
There you go. Ooh.
Actually, Tanit, the host of Femme Fatales,
read for that.
She read for the part.
Yeah.
She does have a Diana.
Yeah, I could see that kind of quality.
Online, I think there were some auditions that were posted.
Right.
Oh, interesting.
That's interesting. Let me check that out.
Okay.
That's really scary, though, now knowing that you can post auditions online.
I know.
I
think it was an emotional thing. I don't know how that got on there.
We're going to have
I don't want that out.
I know.
No, we're going to have a very good actor on the show in the coming weeks, Ari Gross, and he's very active, as you know, in SAG. And he points out that, even being put on tape in an audition violates Screen Actors Guild rules, that there are rules in place that if you're going to be put on tape, if you're going to be filmed for an audition, you need to be given 2 days advance notice. They need to have a professional hair and makeup person. You need to be able to approve as the actor, the cinematographer. But literally, every audition you go in, they're put on tape now. Granted, when those rules were made,
there wasn't video cameras. It was really, they were, you know,
film,
they were
screen
shooting
tests.
And doing yeah. these things. But the whole idea was, you know, yeah, actors in a room with crappy lighting against a white wall and all this sort of stuff, you know, it's...
Yeah.
Can I tell you my worst audition story yes. that I actually was very afraid would be online? I went to a McDonald's audition, and it was like a bikini audition. And it was like... It was for something about, like, you're walking on the beach and you see, like, a little stand of hot dogs, or not hot dogs, hamburgers. And you're supposed to jump up and down and be really excited when you see the hamburger stand. So there I've been, my little
bikini.
This isn't
bikini. That
I'm
long
like,
ago, is it?
No.
I think this is the audition that I read. I got illegally the
oh, really?
Instructions that went out to casting directors because I was so offended by this audition. And so I read this. Yeah, I mean, it actually said no fatties on the breakdown sent out. To the casting directors.
But they let me in. Anyway, so I'm jumping up and down, clapping my hands, and they're like, great, great, good. And so I leave. I'm walking out of the audition. I look down. My bikini top has completely come off.
Are you kidding?
Nobody decided to tell me. No casting director was like, oh, by the way.
Oh, by the way, oh
your
my gosh.
Boobs are out.
Oh, my God.
So was it videotaped?
It was videotaped.
Okay, but now
we're
so
looking
now
for it
look
on the internet.
You're looking
right now.
Right
now.
We're
looking it up on the internet.
No,
right
I swear to God, the next day is like McDonald's audition.
Yeah, Catherine, I thought you had a bad audition story.
I have a bad one.
Okay, let's hear
it. Short, as a writer, Altman and I went in to meet on a pilot. It didn't get picked up, but they were looking to hire writers. And we go in there and we sit with these two guys, and they're like, and they sit in front of them, and they're like, oh, we were hoping one of you was a woman. And I was like, what do you, Steve and Mark, our first names, what was the confusion with that? Obviously, they were looking to hire a woman writer somewhere. And I said, I have Writers Guild health insurance, a sex change operation might be covered, so we were kind of looking desperate for the job then. But that was sort of
come back in with a wig on.
That was sort of a bummer, because I was like, that meeting was over pretty quick.
Well, I had to audition. And I guess this is why it's important you go and always visit with your agent in person, which I never do. Like, it's an email and then whatever. And then it was said, okay, go in for this cruise ship commercial. No dialogue, you just have to dance and be happy. I'm like, oh, okay. And then I'm there with basically all of Mr. California, Mr. Universe bodybuilders. Like, all of these guys, and they're oiling up and shit, and they're all doing bench presses. And I'm like, I better be the comedic foil for this thing. And I'm like, I have my T-shirts on, and I'm in my pants. And these guys are, like, down to their Speedos and shit. I'm like, and I'm like going through and making sure I got the right audition. Yeah, dancing on a cruise ship. And it's all of they just want these hulky muscle guys. And for some reason, I guess my agent heard I was at the gym every day or something. Not realizing I'm doing cardio, thought I was like totally pumped or something. So sent me in with all these guys. And I go in and have to take off my shirt and my scrawny ribby thing and dance. And just like, I stopped dancing like halfway through that. Just going, yeah, no.
It was the X-Files, right? They just went a different way. They're like, you know,
I got
it was supposed to be three buff dudes as the lone gunman. There was a rewrite last minute. And they took you three.
Right. That was actually how he got cast for this podcast.
Do you remember? I'm just curious. Do you remember what the casting director said to you after that? Were they just like, we'll call you, or like,
yeah,
great
no,
job.
They just went, okay, thanks. Is there anyone else out there in the room that was going to come in? Just do that. Yeah.
Talking into the mic.
Wow, that was talking near the mic. They all went, oh, thank you.
Yeah, no. They didn't pretend to be
They
excited.
Did not even pretend. Okay. They just went, why are you here? And then just walked out. I mean, commercial audition is the worst, though, because it's just like they rotate you through.
Yeah.
They basically know. They see the same people every week, so they know exactly who they're going to put in. But just as, you know, a nicety, or maybe somebody else will blow it out of the water. But basically you see the same people in the commercials all the time because they're there every week. Doing commercial auditions, and these people know them, and so it's like, oh, let's get Scott to do this thing, and they call Scott, and he does it, and that's sort of it, right? I mean, it's.
Have you done any commercials recently?
Not recently. The last one I did was for.
That's why we're in a recession.
Yeah, that's why we're in a recession.
You need to do more commercials.
After that,
people start buying things. Both of you, Catherine and Dean, need to be in more commercials.
I'm not arguing with that. What was the last commercial? That Budweiser thing. I was a German border guard where they were trying to bring in stinky beer. Oh, no, I wasn't the border guard. I was the importer. I was the nefarious, like a drug dealer, trying to like smuggle sneaky beer in instead of, and the guard dog sniffed it and died.
I'm glad you switched that because I was going to ask for your German accent.
Oh, yeah, no. In fact, we had to, I was doing like sort of just a light German accent. And they go, say it like this, und. I'm like, really? That's sort of racist.
I can only do commercials in the Middle East. You can't see me on the pod. It's just, I'm not selling anything in America. Not happening.
I know, yeah, right?
No one's buying.
You're from Chicago, for crying out loud.
Falafel? I could sell a lot of falafels in
I'd buy a falafel from you, Steve.
Exactly.
Falafel sells itself.
Chickpeas.
Come on, exactly. You don't need that.
Hummus. You know, hummus. These are products I could endorse.
You sold femme fatale.
Well, exactly. And let's talk, because we got to wrap up, so let's sell femme fatale a little bit.
Right.
Who would not enjoy femme fatales? Let's start there. Who would not? Who shouldn't bother watching femme fatales?
My mom.
One of the actors said, "Could my fiance watch this?" I said, "Yes." Could my mother-in-law watch this? No.
So
she's probably out. Yeah, my grandmother's 91. She goes to see everything.
So she's going to watch it.
My parents watch it. They're like, you know what? We're not going to have her watch this one. You know, little too racy for grandma. But
really?
She goes out and she saw like that Jake Gyllenhaal movie with Anne Hathaway. They're running around nude. So. Grandma could handle it maybe a little bit.
Can I say something about that? Yeah, there is nudity in it, and there's, you know, sex scenes, but it's all in its place. It's not like Skinamax, where it's like, oh, right. Random gratuitous sex.
Yeah.
No, there's the sex forwards the story a lot.
And what about the violence? What about, I mean, these do have
element.
Murders?
There is some violence element. We never mix the sexy stuff with the violence.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the show. But there is a danger element to it that, you know, that any character could get, you know, taken.
Yeah, it's
out
a film noir.
So it's film noir. It's, you know, contemporary crime stories. And I think, you know.
Suspenseful?
Some are suspenseful. They're all different. I mean, we have a comedy episode, which I think where we succeeded, where the Twilight Zone failed, is some of the funny Twilight Zone episodes are not particularly funny. Whereas
they're heavy-handed. I mean, it's really kind
yeah.
of.
Yeah. Yeah. But then, you know, sort of the. Some of the mysteries are, you know, you don't know what's this good twist. There's always some sort of twist at the end to keep people guessing. And if you watch every week, certain pair of characters will maybe reoccur or make a reference to something that happened previously. And that's sort of an added bonus. I think people just like, you know, good storytelling and just, you know, good acting.
It also feels like, it sounds to me like there's nothing, never mind that it might be the only anthology show, but it also sounds like the tone and especially the way the tone might be different from week to week. Kind of sets it apart from anything
exactly,
else that's
yeah.
on.
There's really nothing. I mean, to say it's like this or like that is just that's you can't even. It's nothing really to compare it to.
That's true.
You know? And Catherine, you've now done three episodes,
mm-hmm.
right? Of it.
Yeah, the season finale is two parts. It's
a two-parter.
It's called Visions.
Ah. Cool. And was the tone, and you play the same character.
I do.
And was the tone similar from one episode to the other, or were they
totally
different?
Actually, it was completely different, which was really fun to be able to play the same character, but completely different sets and tones. And the one that Dean and I are in is a little bit more contemporary, girls gone dead, like college sorority girls. So it's very, you know, current day. And then when I come back in the Visions part one and two, it's very... very noir and, you know, very glammed up, and it's at a magician's, you know, castle, so to say. So it's very...
Yeah, it was that mansion that was on the top, up at...
Paramount,
Lake.
I think Paramount.
Paramore. Mansion.
Oh, cool.
Paramore Mansion,
oh, yeah,
which a lot of people
haunted.
Don't get to see because they don't give tours in there anymore.
Right.
You have to get married in there. I think it's the only place to see it. But we shot two episodes there, and it's great. That's the place we went... We saw the location. We're like, we're going to use this.
Oh, that's right. Paramore. Yeah, they don't offer public tours?
I don't think they have... No, because a friend of mine said, heard we were shooting there. And he's like, he lives in Silver Lake. He's like, I'm dying to see that place. I go, you know, he was in an earlier episode. So I'm like, come by.
Come
so
on by.
Like the reunion here show and just come by and you could see it. It's pretty neat.
That's so right. awesome.
Yeah, great view. Interesting view of downtown.
Yeah.
Yeah,
from that angle.
From that
yeah.
angle. It's not something you normally see. Yeah.
Totally. Awesome. Okay. What else do we need to know?
That's, well, I want to say to Steve, because Steve was on before when he was on the show Castle, and I got the chance to tell him this at the party, and and now I get to say it on the show, but I do not think it's a coincidence that the quality of Castle absolutely disappeared at roughly the same time you were parting ways.
And
it's absolutely true, because I mean, I just found this show to become suddenly unwatchable.
Yeah,
you know.
So that's a hats off to you, sir.
And Femme Fatales is hopefully super watchable.
Super watchable. Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome.
We can't wait. So everybody can see their friend in podcasting, Dean Haglund.
Dean Haglund
and Catherine this Friday. on Cinemax
at
10 p.m.
Or set your TiVo, like
it's
I do.
11 p.m. here in L.A.
It is?
It's in L.A. But yeah, people have different feeds, and if you have on demand, it's like the day of, you can on just watch it. Yeah,
exactly.
So it's sort of the
so
time slot sort of wavers around, but I think it's 11 p.m.
But so find
on the West Coast.
It's Girls
yeah,
Gone Dead.
I know it's 10 o'clock in Chicago because my parents watch it.
Yeah. Any other websites? What's your website?
And what else? You have anything else coming up that we need to know about, Catherine?
I just have a couple movies. Super Shark.
Super Shark, no way.
That's an entire podcast in its own.
When that comes out, we got to do that.
Oh, my God. Is that going to be on Sci-Fi?
I think so. I think we're in discussions. So.
Oh, my God. I love those Super Shark ones.
Yeah, and then I have Nobody Can Cool is coming out. And then some fighting stuff called warriorshowdown.com. Go to warriorshowdown.com. See the fighting.
Awesome. I'm going to. Steve, anything, websites that you have to go to?
Well, you know, all the Femme Fatale stuff, you know, Comic-Con, we will all be down there at Comic-Con.
Maybe Dean and I ought to do a little podcast
from Comic-Con.
Comic-Con, we should actually maybe do it over cocktails. That's all I'm saying.
That's all I'm saying,
idea.
Little
so
cocktails.
Yeah. Check out my NCIS reruns on USA, because they run it like 2,000 times a day on that show, on that channel.
Awesome. Okay.
What else? Oh, the Pancake and Booze Art Show here in L.A., which Dean will be having art in. My friend Tom Curlin is the creator of that. I Make the Pancakes. That's coming up June
23rd?
24th,
the weekend.
It's Friday and Saturday.
Friday and Saturday, the 24th and 25th.
And I might get body painted. We'll see.
What?
Several Femme Fatales.
I did last time.
We'll be getting body painted at the event.
Wow.
It's a great event in multi-cities, but it started here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's a huge performance art happening. It's like a throwback to the 60s.
It's really cool.
It's awesome. And I'm going to have some stuff there, so we'll talk all about that.
I'll be in Charleston.
You'll be in Charleston. Screw you.
Working.
You ain't going. I'll be there. And, of course, you can find our show
We're everywhere. We're everywhere you want to be.
Everywhere you
want to be. ShowpackHollywood.com. You can download us. You can stream us. You can subscribe to us via iTunes.
Yes, you can.
Thank you. And hello to all our Jackalope listeners. Jackalope Radio. And everyone at the Talk Superstation. Be a liker of this show on Facebook at facebook.com/ChillPackHollywood. Follow Dean Haglin on Twitter. He's /DHaglin.
Yeah.
I'm /PhilLarinus, and write us, as always, chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com. We love to hear from you, and we like talking about what you want us to talk about.
Because this is your Chill Pack Hollywood
Hour. It's your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. Steve, Catherine, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.